You are now listening to Financial Fornicating with Madam Money and Friends, the podcast where controversial cash conversations and fun financial tips are shared for healthier relationships with your money. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be big mad or laugh out loud. Either way, we're about to learn something. Let's go.
Hey there, this is Tara Jackson, aka Madam Money. Welcome to Financial Fornicating with Madam Money and Friends. I am so honored to be your host and to have such an amazing guest with me, Dr. Constance Mason. Hey girl, hey.
Hey, hey.
It's been a while, but you are doing some amazing things out there. I had the opportunity to do the foreword for one of your books. You're just out there killing the game and teaching people how to elevate themselves financially. So it's an honor to have you on Financial Fornicating with Madam Money and Friends. Before we get into it, because of course I know how amazing you are, let the world know who you are and let them know how amazing you really are.
Amazing. Okay, I'll take it. So I am Dr. Constance Craig Mason. I am a financial planner, investment advisor, insurance broker, but more importantly, I am someone who champions people who want to win, people who want more out of their life and out of their business. And I do that through a myriad of ways by empowering, inspiring, doing a bunch of workshops, seminars, webinars. The thing that I love to do is just be an example. I'm what they call an unlikely entrepreneur because I grew up in the inner city of Baltimore in poverty. To a young single mom who was struggling. And everything that I have learned, at least early part in my life and early part of my career, I Googled it. Google owed me some money because I'm always sharing about them in my story. But I did seek out help to improve my life from a personal perspective first. And once I started seeing how some of these basic financial concepts, I could apply them to my life and see results. You know, I had a good girlfriend of mine who told me that I could get into this profession. And even though I didn't jump right in initially, I did take her up on it several years later. And I definitely haven't gone back since. That was January of 2009. So 14 years in this financial industry. I love everything about financial literacy, financial well-being, of course, financial independence, which is where we all like to be. But the space that I love being in is spaces like this, where I get to share some of the tips, tools, strategies, nuggets, lessons. I don't say losses, lessons that I have learned in my life and in my career. And I feel like linking up with people like you, Madam Money, who are doing a similar thing, where we engage in community and collaboration. I feel like that is at the heart of what we're supposed to be in this space.
Absolutely. And I love that. You know, I always tell everybody, you know, ask Google. Google's a girl. She knows everything. She's not always right, but she knows everything. Okay.
I love that.
Look at her, you know, look out for her brother YouTube. You know, he got some things going on too, right?
Yeah.
So that's amazing. Today, we're going to talk about the importance of multiple streams of income and how to build multiple streams of income. But before we go into that, let's talk about why is it so important right now to have multiple streams of income. There's many people that have their job, they like their jobs. But right now, people are very sensitive to having to have more money. And so why is it so important to have multiple streams of income, income coming from different sources?
I love how you say now. This is a unique space that we're in the world where some people are pivoting and they're doing exceptionally well. And then you have people who haven't yet figured it out and are still challenged in a lot of ways financially. And I know a lot of the business owners that I engage with over the last few years have really either felt the pressure to ramp it up and be creative and find ways to continue to connect with their target market or their clients. And even people who work, you know, a 9-to-5 or whatever schedule they work, you know, finding out that the doors may have been shut due to no faults of your own, or, you know, being a little bit afraid of being in a unhealthy environment because, you know, the pandemic kind of scared us all in a lot of ways. And it really forced us to look at what our finances look like, because if we were having to not go to work for several months, you know, until they opened the doors back, or if we were an in-person business, like a lot of us are, you know, service-based businesses where we have to meet with people, it was challenging, you know, for the last 3 years to try and figure that out. And the conversations that I was having with my peers, with my clients, was just like, I don't think I have enough. Like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to sustain myself or even thrive like I was before. And one of the things that caused them to look at it that way was maybe they only had that one stream or maybe two that they were comfortable and confident in. And then now they're finding that, okay, go through the savings, you know, unemployment is taking a lot longer than we anticipated, or, you know, I haven't been able to get as many clients as I thought I would. And it causes your credit to take a dip sometimes, or maybe it causes you to feel like, well, I had enough to sustain, but now I'm depleted in my savings. Yeah. And, you know, I too had to pivot. You know, I was one of those businesses that was upfront and personal, you know, sitting across the kitchen table with families. And I loved it, a lot of driving and traveling, but I found that during the pandemic, I had to go mostly virtual, and it didn't hurt my business. Actually, it helped my business to be able to meet with more people in a day as they're challenged financially, or they had questions about their next, that I could literally hop on a Zoom and be available for them and not exhaust myself. So the pandemic, I know, and we're coming out of it definitely, not for just from a health perspective, but in business, you know, in our relationships and how we visit people and how we spend time. We're coming out of that space, but I know that it did cause, you know, some red flags. It caused people to scratch their head a bit. It caused people to be a little unnerved. And sometimes we do need moments like that for us to make some changes. And when I think about seven streams, it sounds like a lot. You definitely don't have to have seven. It's just, it gives you an idea of where you can position yourself. You know, if you can't do some of them right now, do what you can, because one is not enough. We all found that out. It's just not enough.
You know? Right. So let's talk about that. We talk about seven streams of income, and I know a lot of people are like, that's a lot. Seven streams of income? Like, I'm trying to do two, right? So, you know, I have my job that gives me one, and then, you know, I may have a little side business or whatever that gives me two. But let's talk about it. Let's talk about the seven streams of income. What are the, you know, let's talk about the first one. What's the first two or three streams of income?
Yeah, that's good. I think about you often when I think about the coin that you turned dualpreneur or dualpreneurship. Whenever I use it, I do give you credit because there are people,
mind you if you don't.
You know, there are people who are used to the earned income, right? We earn our income, we earn our way, whether it's commission based or hourly salary bonuses, all of those kinds of things. You know, we're comfortable with that, been doing it pretty much probably our whole adult lives. It's common sense. However, when we think about dualpreneurship, you might also have a business. So we've got earned income, we've got profit income. So oftentimes we're not going into business necessarily for it to be a hobby. We want to be able to be profitable. And oftentimes we're able to do that from a perspective of, okay, maybe I have a products-based business or even a service-based business where I want what I have put into it to be less than what I get out of it. Right. So I want to be able to have a wholesale product that I have now put out on the market for retail and I'm profiting from it. Or even, let's say in my business, you know, if you have someone where you want to serve them, and if you have pivoted during the pandemic and you're on Zoom, maybe you have some kind of internet cost or some kind of Zoom cost or whatever, StreamYard, whatever your cost is to be in front of someone. But in the course of being in front of them, you offer a service where it's $500 or $1,000. Now you have profit between what it costs you to deliver that conversation or that service. And then now you are able to profit from it. So dualpreneurship, I find that people are comfortable with that. Okay, I do my business on the weekend, or I do my business in the evenings, or, you know, whatever it is. So that's two right there. And most of us are comfortable with those. But I'll hop into the third one where it's kind of like that out of sight, out of mind money. When I think about it, it's interest. So interest income, if you are you know, putting your funds someplace, and that financial entity, such as banks, insurance companies, credit unions, whoever, is going to offer you a rate of return in exchange to hold or use your money, right? Yeah. So in the olden days, our grandparents and great-grandparents, like, get a CD, right? Yeah. So you put your money in a CD, you allow the bank to utilize your money, and in exchange for that, they give you interest over a period of time. So that is happening while you're sleeping, while you're working, you're at church, wherever. You don't really have to do anything extra. But this interest is being accumulated on your behalf. And that's a really easy way to not have to be present for something, right? When we think about our earned income and our business or profit income, we most times have to be present unless you have a team or people like that who are showing up on your behalf for the revenue to come in. Oftentimes it's us showing up somewhere. Right. But interest, you deposit your money, you get an interest rate declared or otherwise, and you're off and running, right? So that's three.
That's right. So we have the earned income from your job, business income or profit income from your side business. And then interest income from a financial institution where you're making deposits. And usually it is like in either a money market, CD, something that's going to give you higher interest, not a savings account, because savings account doesn't give you any interest, interest bearing accounts where you can earn interest on that money. Okay, great. So what are the next ones?
So the next one I can think of is kind of similar, but it's dividend income, similar. But when I think about dividends, one of the first things that comes to my mind, and even interest, is your cash value life insurance. So you have these life insurance policies where you are making your premium payment every month because you want to be insured and covered if something terrible happens. But in exchange for that, you get the interest on that cash value. But you also, if the insurance company is what they call participating, they have to be a participating company. And if so, you earn dividends on that money. So it's not the entire amount of the premium you pay. It is an amount where the, let's say in this example, the insurance company has a budget, just like we all do. And if they come in under budget, they are going to then pass on that money to you as a policyholder. So I also think about stocks, right? So you have stocks and you might be able to earn dividends on your stocks. So if you have a portfolio that is managed or even one that you manage yourself, you can look for dividends from certain companies that are profiting. So that is, again, something that you are not having to show up someplace and punch a clock or even push a product or service on anyone, but you are actually reaping the benefit of someone else's growth. Right. Or someone else's cost effectiveness. So earned, profit, interest, and dividend. Now that's four.
And that's four right there. And so what it is that even with the fourth one, with the dividend, you can set it and forget it. Okay. So you set the monthly payment. And that's why I love the cash value life insurance policies, whether it's your whole life, your index universal lives, or whatever that you want to do. Now talk to your insurance agent, every company. Now, when she says participative, usually those are the ones that have mutual in their name. So if they have mutual in their name, that means every person that has a cash value policy is an owner of it. You can vote. And that is why you're getting the dividends. It is not going to happen with a term policy. Right. So you have to have a whole life or a cash value policy so that you are an owner of it, and owners get dividends. That's why when you do stocks, you are an owner of the company. And because you are an owner of the company, you get dividends when they do well. Okay. So just think about it this way, even at a credit union, you can get dividends from credit unions. There are some credit unions that give dividends to their members. So I always say ownership means own your shit with a T, but own your shit. When you were an owner, you reap the benefits of those dividends. So I love it. So I love the earned income, profit income, interest income, dividend income. One of my favorites. Dividend. All right. What's the next one? I'm getting excited now.
Listen, we got to get excited about being able to build wealth and sustainability, right? Being able to take care of ourselves and our family, if that's what we've got going on. But my next one is real estate income. Come on now. So okay. Real estate income, of course, you can get into real estate in a myriad of ways. Mm-hmm. But of course, those of us who think about being a landlord, right? So we have this property that we have purchased or we can leverage. And now we're getting someone in there that's going to pay not only the mortgage if you have one, but you want to be able to profit from that as well. So there should be something left over with that monthly revenue that you can put into your pocket. Of course, you want to keep the property up. You don't want to be a slumlord. But I think about it in that way. And even with your primary residence, you know, that is a way for you to also have an asset that you can leverage for other things, right? For other income opportunities. So I know for myself, when I was younger and I had small babies, I used to see these infomercials where they'd be like, oh, you can buy a home for no money down and, you know, bad credit and all this stuff. And I'm like, scratching my head, like, how can I do that? So I go to these workshops and they tell us how we can buy property and do all this stuff. And at the end, they would be like, for $7,000,
right, right. $20,000, you can get the process. Absolutely.
Right. I'm like, I caught the bus here. I don't have money for what you're talking about. But the idea was that if you are able to get into real estate, it opens up other doors for you. And he asked me, one of the hosts asked me, he said, have you ever bought a home before? And I said, no. And he was like, okay, so stop coming to all these workshops, seminars, spending your money, trying to get here. He was like, because if you're able to buy your first home and live in it, he's like, now you understand the process, right? You understand the lending, the credit, the deposits, you know, how it all works from firsthand knowledge. And yes, when you do it and you pay your payments on time, he's like, you're able to open up equity. So then now you can use that equity to buy another property or whatever else you want to do. But I was thinking, why can't I just be a landlord off the rip? And he's like, it doesn't work.
Yeah, I love that. And then for people that are saying, well, I may own my home, but I don't, you know, I can't get into, I don't have the money or I don't have the equity to get in real estate and investing to get real estate income. Actually, what I tell a lot of people, because I had three opportunities to have investment properties and I gave them away, right? I own three properties, but what I did was I bought it, then I sold it and bought another one. I sold it and bought another one, right? What I should have done is when I bought it, when I wanted to buy the other one, I should have put a tenant in there to pay that mortgage, then bought the other one. And then when I left that one, put a tenant in there and then, you know, went to my next one. So even if you have your first home, instead of selling the property when you're going to buy a new property, consider turning that property into an investment property. Even if you turn it now, you can do Airbnb.
I was thinking about that.
Or how about you have a place, you have a home, but you travel all the time.
Right.
You can turn your home into Airbnb and make money off of your property when you're not even there.
Yes.
There are so many opportunities now to get into real estate investing where you don't even have to, you don't have to use your equity anymore. If you do have equity, that's great.
Exactly.
So many new opportunities. If you have the home there, my sister had a home where everything was upstairs, but she had a whole suite downstairs in a basement and an extra entrance that came down to the downstairs. So it was a living room, kitchen, bedroom, bathrooms, everything downstairs, right?
Yeah.
So that was an opportunity to do an Airbnb because it's a separate entrance while they're still living there.
Exactly. And you know what I want to say too about that is in full disclosure and you know, just letting you know, depending on how you acquire these properties, whether you have an FHA loan, a VA loan, commercial, however you've gone into it, sometimes it matters, right? With the loan product, if you're able to keep one, get another one, or if you're able to put tenants in, you know, they have these guidelines as it relates to the product, the lending product that you have. But if you are able to, then, you know, have discussions about which one.
That's a very good point, is that you have to understand the lending product that you have or that you're getting into. If you are looking to buy a home, these are the questions you need to ask. Like, will I be able to do this? Will I be able to keep this home if I'm buying another home? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's good if you have not purchased a home and you're listening to this, because now you know what questions to ask. But even if you do have your first home, you can still speak with your financial institution or your mortgage institution to ask the questions. And if you're limited now, you know the next time when you buy a home, what kind of flexibility you want to have with the lending product.
Yeah. And lastly, before we hop off to our next one, if you are in a homeowners association, you definitely want to ask them as well, because sometimes they have limitations on how many of those units could be used for renting. Yeah. You know? So they want to have
if they will allow Airbnb.
Exactly.
Homeowners associations will not allow Airbnbs.
Right. So they usually have some kind of ratio within the community where they want to have X amount of homeowners versus X amount of renters. So, again, you know, just know what kind of questions to ask before you just make a jump, because you may find penalties or you may come across some no's. But we want to be proactive as possible.
Absolutely. But there is opportunity there. OK, so I'm excited. Yeah. We have earn income, profit income from your business.
Yeah.
Interest income from savings or interest bearing accounts, dividend incomes from accounts, insurance, stock, whatever you own.
Yeah.
And then we have real estate income.
Yeah.
All right. What's the next one?
The next one is capital gains income. So when we think about capital gains, it's all good when you're getting the capital gains, but then when you have to pay taxes on the capital gains,
that's a different story. Right.
I was like, wait a minute. Now I was happy for a minute. However, you know, depending on, well, first of all, how you get capital gains is essentially you have purchased something at a certain price and now you're going to get rid of it or sell that thing, whether it's a home, it's an investment product, something like that. And so what you have earned or gained on that purchase is now taxable. But what you do with that capital gains, like we keep talking about, take one asset, leverage it for another. We keep talking about that. But capital gains is essentially when you profit from something. I have a cost basis. I've purchased for this X amount and now I can sell for this amount. And the difference is the capital gains. OK, so now you want to make sure you talk to your tax professional because it's like, hey, I want to be able to do these things and maybe do it consistently. But I want to know what is going to be my cost, right? What is going to be, you know, the penalty, if anything, that I'm going to pay. So when we think about real estate, we were just talking about, instead of, you know, just selling your first home or selling a property and just taking the money and, you know, going on and getting your second home, you know, you could do that, right? It's fine. But just knowing that when you do that sale, you might have a capital gains tax. Now, it might be that if you do it too soon, you would have a higher tax than you would if you did it later on. So even timing is important.
Exactly.
So timing is important, being able to ask the right questions, being able to have good professionals in your pocket where you're like, hey, before I do this, tell me what you know about it. So capital gains income is my number six.
Yes.
I do want to
throw out that when you are going to talk to a tax professional, make sure you speak with a tax professional, not just a tax preparer. A tax preparer, you know, could have said, oh, I'm just going to do taxes. And they just started doing taxes. Find someone that's in the game that knows the laws. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Because the laws change every year. So make sure you speak with a tax professional that understand the tax laws and how anything you do is going to affect you. And, you know, and most of the time, tax preparers may not understand the laws completely. Not saying they're not good at doing your taxes, but when you're talking strategy, you definitely want to speak with a tax strategist or tax professional. And they don't cost a lot. Some of them will do a free assessment for you. So don't be intimidated by that, but speak with the right one, because if you don't, it's going to cost you more later.
And that's a good point, because just like in our space, in the finance space, you know, there's all kind of terms and titles and designations and experience levels. And, you know, people get confused about, well, which one do I need? Do I need a coach? Do I need an advisor? Do I need an investment manager? Like, who do I need? And even in the tax space, you know, when you think about accountants versus CPAs versus, like you said, EAs and just tax preparers, there are so many different levels of knowledge and experience as people have. I mean, they even have real estate tax professionals, you know, they have these designations. And so, you know, not to get too heavy in the weeds, but know exactly who you want to go to ask the appropriate questions.
And I love that you mentioned that, because you may want to talk to a tax professional whose focus is real estate. if you're dealing with capital gains with real estate, okay? So just like an attorney has different focuses, accountants, CPAs, and tax professionals have different focuses as well. You have your primary care physicians, but then you have your specialists, right? So I don't want my ear, nose, and throat doctor to do my heart surgery. Just throwing that out, right? So it's the same with financial, especially with tax repair. There may be a generalist, but if you're talking something specific to, say, real estate or even cryptocurrency, right? You want to speak with accountants that really understand those different focuses.
Mm-hmm. That's great, Madam Money. My last one is royalty income.
Oh, yes. I love my royalty checks. Need you to know. Need you to understand.
So royalty income is essentially you have created something, right? Some art, some process, some kind of product. And now you are allowing someone else to use it. Right. So you let someone use your art, your talent, your process. I keep thinking about Bill Gates and all these people that created things that didn't exist. Mm-hmm. And now we use them every single day. And what happens is when that person profits, you also profit. Now, you did something one time and you allowed access to one person, multiple people, however you did it. And now while you're sleeping, you are getting that money coming back into you. Some people call it residuals. Some people call it royalties, but it's similar. And this is that money that you are getting in because you already did something. You already did it. And now someone else wants to have a piece of it. And in exchange for their hard work of pushing it out again or pushing it out now, you did it years ago. And now they are bringing it back to the marketplace or however. You're able to get a percentage of that as you are sleeping or working.
So case in point, I love when I get my deposits from Amazon, right? Yes, because I wrote a couple books. It's on their website. They promote it. People want to find it. They Google it, goes whatever. Because they're selling it, and they're selling it for whatever the prices is. Exactly. I still get royalty checks for every time they sell a book, right? Or I can sell the book. I can get it or whatever. But because Amazon is selling the book, they'll make majority of it, but I'm still getting royalty checks. So I just had a library that purchased 100 of my books. So I'm going to get a royalty check for that purchase from the library. You know what I mean? So I love that. You know, every month, I don't know how much I'm getting. I just get money in my account.
I love don't that look good.
I only had to write the book one time, right?
Exactly.
The book one time, and then I was like, "Ooh, I like this." So I wrote two more books, and I'm about to write another book. So
come on now with the books. Come on.
You know what I mean? So that is, if you're a musician, it's the same thing. If you go and you sell your music, you did it one time, and people download it, purchase it, and all that stuff, and you get those royalty checks. That is money while you sleep.
I love it. I love it. Like, you don't you love when you say you get the check and it's like, wait, what did I do?
I love looking at my account and like it's more than what it was the last time I checked. And I have to look and it's from Amazon. Oh, okay. Good job.
Love it. Love it. And look, I even got some bonuses for you if we have time, right? Yeah. These seven are great, but we got a couple more, right? So think about our parents and grandparents. Mm-hmm. And their pension checks, right? So listen, now I do know that nowadays pensions aren't as prevalent as they used to be, but a pension is essentially when you have worked for a company X amount of years, whatever the agreement was, 20 years and out, 25, 30 years and out, whatever. Mm-hmm. And now you don't have to show up anymore to that place of business, but they are going to cut you a check every month until you pass away. Mm-hmm. And then, depending on how you sign up when you retire, they may continue to pay your spouse or your loved one a pension check on your behalf when you pass away. They continue to get your payments. Now, that's not every situation. So, again, when you're sitting down and you're going through your exit plan and everything with your HR department, make sure you figure out, is this just for my life only or for my life and my spouse or, you know, whatever. But again, you've given this company your hard-earned time, energy, thoughts, work out, whatever you've given them. And in exchange for that, they're saying, I'm going to take care of you. Now, sometimes it's enough, sometimes it's not enough, but it is a stream that you can use to continue to take care of yourself, your family, or vacation with. It's up to you, right? Mm-hmm. So pension plans, if they are still available, are great, because if you are committed to what you do, you are committed to how you serve, and you want to do that for 20, 25 years, and you want to be a part of someone else's vision. Now, if you're an entrepreneur and you got your own vision, great. If you are linked up with a company that believes in you and you believe in them, by all means, stay there and get that pension plan, right? Got anything to add about that, Tara?
No, I think that's a great point. If you have a family member or you have a spouse that has a pension, you do need to find out if it converts over, and then who does it convert over to, right? Yeah. And so, like, when my mother passed away, her pension went to my father. So it's sometimes it's a spousal benefit. Sometimes it's a spouse and children benefit. Exactly. So, for example, if it's a spouse and children, when my, you know, my father passed away, it could come to my sister and I. But we would need to know if it, you know, goes that way. It could be a single mom. Like, I'm a single mom. If I have a pension, the question we'll ask is, when I pass, can it be converted to my son?
Mm-hmm. And that's a great question, because when you go and have that conversation with their HR people, they are not licensed investment advisors or financial advisors, and they are not allowed to tell you which option to pick.
Right.
And there usually are several options when you sit down with them. They say, okay, you could get this amount per month or that amount per month. And if you do this, you get that. I've been through it with my husband, right? Okay. And when you go in there, whatever you pick is what happens. You cannot then later come back and say, oh, no, I meant this. Or no, now that I've talked to somebody, I want to change it. So again, these conversations need to be had with your financial advisor or investment advisor or financial planner or whomever, because once you press option whatever, it is it. That's it.
Yeah. I recommend if you have an insurance person that you already establish insurance policy, because you do need insurance outside of your job. Okay.
Absolutely.
That just needs to happen. That's a whole other show, but you need insurance outside of your job. But if you have an insurance professional that you trust, you definitely need to ask them if they can go through your options with you to help you select the right one. You're already doing business with the insurance professional or financial advisor or whatever. So this is just an added benefit. Hey, can you take a look at this and help us to make a decision that's going to complement what we want to do financially through you? Okay. So it always happens. Or just ask, see if someone will do a review for you, because now it's the beginning of a good relationship. Because they may say, you know what, this is not going to give you what you want, but I do have another product that may be able to support or supplement that for your family.
Absolutely. I love that. I love always, that word supplement.
Always. Because honestly, in some cases, you may leave the job. Mm-hmm. And if you leave the job, you're leaving the insurance policy. If you're getting terminated from the job, you may be penalized and get terminated from the pension or get terminated from the insurance policy. So a lot of people say, well, I have insurance at work. Well, if you leave the job, you get fired, or their budget doesn't work and they have to cut benefits, that's the first things they're going to cut. And now you're left with nothing.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. Yep.
But I love that benefit, because nobody really thinks about that.
Very true. And then my last bonus one, that will be stream number 9, is Social Security income. Now, listen, do not throw your shoe at this screen right now.
I was ducking and dodging,
y'all throwing stuff, remote controls and everything. However, I know that they say roughly around 2035 that there might not be enough funds in the system to be able to pay even the current beneficiaries their 100% of their benefit. They might be up to like 70% of their benefit. However, for those who are nearing Social Security, the age of, you know, majority, you know, this could be a stream of income for you. Even if it's not the 100% that you are entitled to, it is, like you said, a supplement. It is something to add to what you've already worked hard to position yourself for. So Social Security, again, after you've had a certain amount of credits that you've worked for, And then once you reach a certain age, you can begin to pull out your Social Security benefits. Now, of course, if you become disabled, there may be some options for you to pull out that income early. But we're talking about how can we get multiple streams before retirement, while in retirement, and after retirement, so that we're not sitting someplace, you know, having to go back to work in our 60s and 70s, or you know, you might even see some people working part-time in retirement, and not because they absolutely enjoy what they do, but because they feel the need to supplement, you know, because the one or two isn't enough. And so we want you to be proactive in this conversation.
Absolutely. So Social Security is not a main source of income. It was always meant to be supplementary. Yeah. I don't know. A supplemental of whatever, mm-hmm. income you have, right? So a lot of people are living off of Social Security, but they have to go back to work to supplement mm-hmm. Social Security. And that's not how it was built. Social right. Security was supposed to supplement the other forms of income that you've established. So make sure you start establishing those other forms of income. So when the Social Security comes, it's supplementing, it's adding to, it's allowing you to do more, not mm-hmm. limiting you to only what the government gives you.
Love it. You phrased that so well.
Oh, thank you. That's kind of what I do. No, but that's amazing. So to recap, we have the earned income from your job, the profit mm-hmm. income from your side business or from your business, yeah. the interest income from deposits, CDs, money markets, or whatever, the dividend interest from cash value, cash value life insurance policies, from participative insurance companies or companies that has usually mutual in it, or stocks with companies that provide dividends. Then we have real estate investing income. And then we have the, what was number six? Capital gains.
Yeah, capital gains.
Watch out for that because you're going to be taxed on it. And then finally, we have the royalty.
Yes, royalty income. Mm-hmm.
My favorites. And then we mentioned the pension
and Social Security
without throwing our boot to you.
Yes. Don't hit me with a remote control because right. I know my forehead big enough. But listen, that's nine streams.
That is nine streams. And she's only asking you to do seven. I'm just saying. Okay. Let's start off with three. You know, let's start off with two. Get your side business. Come on. Let's save a little bit more. And then come on. Let's make sure we have enough life insurance.
Yeah.
You know, life insurance.
Or
let's make sure that we are investing in the 401ks if you have it. Because a lot of companies are taking out their 401ks. So, you know, they're not even matching anymore.
Exactly.
The reason why you do a 401k is because of the match.
Right.
So if you want to invest, but you don't have a 401k, you need to contact someone like Dr. Constance so they can give you more options on how to build the dividend income as well. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Now, if people want to work with you, how can people connect with you or work mm-hmm. with you?
Very easy. I am all over social media, of course, all of your major platforms at C. Craig Mason, like my name, at C. Craig Mason. And I do have a website as well. I have a short link, bit.ly/ C. Craig Mason, F-A, C. Craig Mason, F-A. Just inbox me if you want to have a chat. There's no cost for a conversation. I can send you my calendar link and we go from there.
See, she's even allowing a complimentary consultation. No excuses. Make sure you connect with Dr. Constance Craig Mason to mm-hmm. at least talk about how you can begin the process of establishing your seven streams of income. Thank you so much, Constance, for sharing your time and sharing these awesome ways to build our wealth through these nine streams of income. I so appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Likewise. Thank you, Madam Money.
Absolutely. And for you, all of you, just so long as you understand, ignorance is not bliss. It's expensive as hell. I love you, and there's nothing you can do about it. See you on the next one.